this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest, very special guest, author, speaker, researcher, journalist extraordinaire, Cheryl Shumley. Go to CherylShumley.com. Website, fantastic website, by the way. Up-to-date information. Of course, her book, The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington. Yes, sirree. Be bold, because we are the bosses of presidents, politicians, and police. That's chapter 6 of her book. We have both books here at the Hagman Studio. Highly recommend. If you want to look at the current situation through the prism of the Bible, as opposed to the world, just the worldview, this is the book to get, as well as Police State USA. I consider those two as a package deal. Before we get back to Cheryl, I just want to mention that, you know, when my wife and I go in warm different parts of the country, we carry satellite phones from the satellite phone store. Folks, you've got to check out the satellite phone store. Go to satellitephonestore.com. These are the Iridium satellite phones. These are great phones. You can talk anywhere. I'll tell you what, owning and using a satellite phone has really freed, I mean, I can actually dial. It's actually got numbers on it. But the fact of the matter is this. When all other means of communication are out, or the cell phone lines are down, or the reception, you can't get reception, all you need to do is have a clear line of sight to a satellite. Here you go. This is what you use. And I'll tell you something. It is cheaper than you might think. Less expensive than you think. Go to satellitephonestore.com. That's satellitephonestore.com. They've got just a number of different plans. Talk to Eric Tallman. Ask for Eric. Ask for the different plans. Tell them that Doug and Joe sent you. That's satellitephonestore.com. This is the satellite phone. My wife and I both each have our individual phones. I'm losing my voice. That's too many videos over the weekend, I guess, right?
Too much reading?
Too much reading, right. Anyway, but satellitephonestore.com. But we're joined by Cheryl. Cheryl, if I say that one more time, shoot me, Joe.
You say it one more time, you're suspended for the evening.
Really? I got to have a jar here. I got to throw dollars in or something. I'm so sorry. Cheryl Shumley, just a wonderful, gracious lady, an author of books, as I said, Police State USA and The Devil in D.C., winning back the country from the beast in Washington.
Yeah, true investigative journalist.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question, if I can, kind of off script, not that we have a script, obviously, but your work with the Freedom of Information Act, what have you found out with respect to the Freedom of Information Act? Because I know that you've done a lot of work with the Freedom of Information Act request. How forthcoming is our government with respect to records and information that they may not want us to have?
You probably already know the answer to that, Doug. They're not very forthcoming at all. You know, it used to be standard practice for me whenever I would go to cover a new government body that one of my first requests would be to get the salaries and work titles and names and so forth, and years in service of all the government officials. If I was covering a board of supervisors, I would get all the county government employees, from police to teachers to, staffers in the cafeteria. I didn't care, because that is information that you, as an American citizen, deserve to have. You are the employer. You are the boss of these people. So you have the right to know how much you're paying them. And a lot of government officials, why do you want that? What are you going to do with that? Where are you going to use that? And, you should know, if you ever go to make a FOIA request, they don't have the right to know that information. You could just ask, I need the information because I'm an American citizen, I'm a citizen of this state, and I'm your boss, if you want to be really bold about it. And a lot of government officials don't like information like that out there. But here's why. because it shows how they spend your money and how frivolous they are with it. You know, there was a superintendent that I got his contract for and his salary information. And this guy was making $260,000 a year. We're talking about a medium-sized town. We're not talking a city. You know, it was a county of maybe the second largest county in Virginia. So his base salary was $260,000 a year. Taxpayers also paid him his travel costs for his personal car. We paid gas for him. He made 15 trips a month on average. If he went out of state to any type of conference, they paid for his hotel. They paid for his internet in his home and his cable in his home because he could use that in his home for work purposes. And I don't mean to go on and on about this, but, you know, this is information that is crucial if you are the employer of a government official, which you are. It's just the basic information that you should have. And, I implore all Americans to make these requests for their government officials because it reminds them who's in charge. And just once again, to underscore the answer to your question, they don't want to give it up that easily. But in the end, the law is the law.
Yeah, amen to that. Yeah, I just find it amazing that the government does make it difficult at times, if not outright impossible, or even to the point of, dare I say, hiding records if they don't want to give them up, or making them cost prohibitive at times, I suppose, is another way to deal with people who supposedly present problems or appear to present problems to the government officials. But you know, getting back to your book, be bold. We are the bosses. We employ the presidents. We employ the politicians. We employ the police. We are their bosses. And I think that we have to get back. And you rightly point out here, read the Declaration, opening lines of the Declaration of Independence. And I think that we need to really, really do that. And to, you know, keep that as a matter of front and center. But
that should be a duty of each citizen.
Yeah.
More so than a suggestion. Cheryl, if we can, getting back to your books, you know, The Police State USA, I understand that title, where that title comes from. The title, Devil in D.C., why did you title it Devil in D.C.?
Yeah, I mean, we asked you that earlier, but we've got new listeners. In fact, we got about five or six people that just asked what is exactly behind that title, and of course you answered that earlier, but new people that are...
Yeah, and a follow-up question to that would be, what was one of the most interesting things that you learned while writing this book?
Okay, the Devil in D.C. was my marketing department at WND Books that came up with that title, and I absolutely loved it because it pinpoints what the problem is. And the Devil in D.C., a lot of people may think it refers to Obama because it came out at the time he was president, and he's certainly part and parcel of it. But what the real Devil in D.C. is, it's the culture of deceit, dishonesty, treachery, lies, corruption, greed that goes on in our halls of Congress, our White House, our halls of power. And I think we all know this. We're fighting against principalities, and we're not fighting against, you know, Republicans versus Democrats. It's a lot deeper than that. It goes a lot higher than that, and that's what we need to keep in mind as Christians as we go about taking back this country from the atheists and progressives. And the second part of your question, I forget what it was.
Well, we've got several second parts, so let me ask this aspect of that same question here. The forces at work against the forces of freedom inside D.C., and if we are to look at Donald Trump as being part of the freedom movement, my question, or several people are asking, do you see Donald Trump being successful, and if, or alternatively, what do you see the biggest threat to Donald Trump to be at this point?
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting question, because I look at Donald Trump and he is so flawed, isn't he? I mean, especially if you're a Christian, he really offends you sometimes. But just look at how bold he is. I mean, the guy doesn't care. You know, you can come at him with 50 different weapons and, you know, hit him from 100 different directions. And he's up there, and he's doing the thing with his thumb in his hand, and, you know, he's saying he doesn't care. And, you know, what he doubles down on, I am heartened to see, is usually the things I care about as an American, which are tighter borders, national security, jobs, and America first. And those things are music to my ears after 8 years of Obama apologizing for America, bowing to foreign governments, opening borders to anybody and everybody who wants to come in, except, as we discussed earlier, sometimes the Christian refugees. So here's a guy that is very flawed, but his one trait that I think is going to propel him to success is the fact that he will not give in. And I think you can look at that as perhaps God helped bring this leader into America at this time, because God knows that this is the only leader that can withstand the attacks from the vicious left that is going on right now and that will continue for the next 8 years. So I actually think Trump can be successful.
Good.
And I agree. He seems to repel, you know, as you mentioned earlier about Mitt Romney, you know, could Mitt Romney or some of these other candidates, you know, withstand the scrutiny that the media has thrown, you know, at Trump? And we know just from, you know, the 2012 election and just from history that, you know, Donald Trump is completely different when it comes to media scrutiny. He seems to be able to turn it into positive publicity for himself. And, you know, that's a whole different kind of politician than we've seen, at least on the Republican side, in a long time. Not to go too far back, but again, the title, The Devil in D.C., how does we know that the concentration of the corruptions of the, you know, bribery and the influence for money and the terrible things that are happening in D.C., how does that filter out to the state and local governments, that spirit of corruption that's in D.C.?
Well, it starts with money. I mean, money is always involved in corruption, it seems like. You know, if the federal government needs the states to do something, for instance, adopt Common Core into the public education system, then the federal government will unlawfully dangle the carrot of federal funding. And that's what happened under Obama. And that's why you saw some states like Texas taking the lead and other states joining later to fight against the federal government. So the corruption flows downward, and I would caution against seeing D.C. as a more corrupt system than, say, a state government, because, you know, people are people and humans are humans, and there's corruption everywhere, there's good and bad everywhere. It just seems to have a lot more boot-stomping impact in D.C. because the federal government is just so all-overpowering right now.
Got it.
And you just mentioned about the states, and what role, you know, we seem to have this, not a debate really, but I guess a battling of ideologies that, you know, the federal government supreme, what they say should, be the law of the land throughout the states, yet at the same time we were given states' rights, and that states should be, you know, independent from the federal government. Now we see things like eminent domain, where the federal government will come in, and we saw this under the Obama administration, where I think it was three times the size of Texas. Land was seized, for government purposes. And there's many other examples, you know, where laws are one way in certain states, but at the federal level, they're an opposite way. What's the proper balance of states' rights versus the federal government's intrusion?
Well, the states' rights have been stripped. You know, the 10th Amendment was put there for a very good reason. And we lost a lot of states' rights when we stopped having senators appointed by governors, because the Senate was supposed to represent the states' rights, whereas the congressmen, the legislative side, the House, was supposed to represent the people. But now we have the two senators in each state who are elected just like, you know, the congressmen are elected. You know, every 6 years we go and we vote for our senators, and the senators go up there and they're accountable to the people again. So now you don't have the state's rights being represented in Congress. So if you want to fight for that battle, a good way to do it is to fight to return the country to the time when we had senators appointed by the governors of the states. And that would certainly strip a lot of the power that the federal government currently holds over the states.
Okay. I think that's possible. I mean, can we go back there?
You know, like I said, I'm optimistic, but it takes people coming together. It takes people being willing to fight. You know, do I think that's pragmatically possible? I think it's a long climb uphill. But I also think that the states' rights are crucial right now. You know, we wouldn't have a lot of the mess that we have going on in this nation right now if we had states' rights. Abortion never would have been, you know, that was a states' right issue. That would have fallen by the Constitution to the states to decide. You know, Obamacare, states' issue. Gay marriage, states' issue. All these things are supposed to be handled at the states, but they aren't. They're handled by the federal government. So if you want to go to the root of the matter, instead of, you know, fighting these little skirmishes and battles, the real root here is the fate of the 10th Amendment.
Okay. And that's good. And I see where you're headed with that. Now, let's factor in what many people term the false doctrine of judicial supremacy here. All right. Roe v. Wade, never a federal law, never a law of the land, because it's antithetical to the Bible and the Constitution. The same with the Obergefell. Never. The Supreme Court doesn't make the law of the land, one can argue. Where do you fall on judicial supremacy, that argument, if you don't mind?
Well, I agree with you on both those cases, and the thing that was really egregious to me about, you know, the Obergefell decision is that I'm sure you guys follow this, but Mike Huckabee was going around on the media at the time and pointing out to, you know, anybody who would listen that the states had never passed legislation, you know, granting gay marriage. So the Supreme Court was taking it on itself to create a law based on something that was not codified anywhere. It was not a law. And the Supreme Court took it on itself to make it the law of the land. So I am firmly in the camp of believing that the legislature could reel back the Supreme Court, which it needs to be, could reel back the Supreme Court anytime it wanted by passing laws that counter what the Supreme Court puts out in terms of its rulings. I think the Supreme Court needs to be reined in. I think it's done a lot of damage in recent times.
Okay. Now, kind of continuing on that train of thought, I want to ask about the Ninth Circuit Court decision that reined in Trump's executive action. And you write in your book, executive orders are antithetical to the Constitution. And I happen to agree with that. However, this executive order, executive action by Trump seemed to me to be not, of course I can make excuses for anything, but it seemed to me to be more of a, in line with his job description that, hey, I've got to take care of the security of the country. I've got to watch out for the security of the country. But, having said all of that, where is I going with that, basically? I'll just toss out. What do you think about executive orders in the context of, well, in that context, whether it be, well, go ahead.
Just bluntly, I hate executive orders. I hate them so much that I devoted a chapter in both of my books to them. That's how much I think they violate the Constitution. And not just the Constitution, but the spirit upon which our nation was founded. You know, no president has the right to act like a king and just, you know, take pen to paper like Obama bragged about doing so frequently and create this new law, this new policy. That being said, not all executive orders are equal. George Washington himself did 8 executive orders. The difference with his was that his were mostly executive orders to his, cabinet members to ask them to provide him with an update on how things were going. So 8 executive orders over 8 years. That's basically what his were. Obama, on the other hand, though he's only used maybe 300 executive orders, 350, I forget the exact number when he left office. His were egregious overreaches of power. He did things like order his federal government to reel back greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by the year, I think it was 2020. He did that because Congress would not pass the climate change and greenhouse gas emission controls that he wanted. So he decided to take pen in hand and create his own policy out of it. Now, when the federal government actually has to reel that back, what that does is it has a trickle-down effect. So your private businesses, your contract governments, your contract businesses that do business with the government, they also, in order to compete, have to show oftentimes that they have taken those 40% reductions as well. So there's a big difference in how executive orders are used and how they're signed. Now, Trump's executive orders, as I understand it, there's not one executive order that he signed that has done that has brought into being anything different than is not already federal law. You know, they may be federal laws that have been laying dormant for years and years, but they're still federal laws. And what he's done is just codified them and put them into print and activated these federal laws, so to speak.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And, you know, what he's done is issued executive orders basically telling people to apply the laws that are on the books, the laws that are in the Constitution, specifically when it comes to immigration. And I want to ask you about the media. Do you obviously, we know the media is bought and paid for. It's influenced by money, and a globalist ideology. But do you believe that the backlash we see from the media is, you know, even against the constitutional things that Trump is doing, is just for the sake, you know, that it's their job, they have to do it? Or do you think it comes from a more, you know, personal, deep-seated hatred for this country and for what's right?
Well, if it's their job and they have to do it, where were they for the last 8 years? Because I didn't see the media, you know, doing their job with Obama. I mean, it was coronation period for Obama, practically the entire first year he was in the White House. And after that, we were treated to such, you know, stellar questions as, you know, how did you and Michelle enjoy your holiday? Who cares? You know, I just want to know how much we paid for their holiday. But those questions didn't come out until Judicial Watch filed Freedom of Information Act requests for them. So let me be clear. The media is doing this on purpose. Maybe not every single individual member of the media, but the media members that count, that are in positions to sway how the news is covered, to sway how the stories are placed, to sway how the stories are edited and so forth or posted online, they're doing it on purpose. And here's the bluntest example I can give. Remember Huffington Post, how Huffington Post was so offended that Donald Trump was actually running for the high office of the White House that they felt the need to put this little addendum on the bottom of every story about Trump, calling him out for being a misogynist, xenophobe, racist, sexist, and so forth. And at first, they didn't even want to cover him. They put him on the celebrity news pages. Yep. But as he rose in the ranks of politics, then they had to move him to news. But they refused to print any story with Trump's name in it unless it contained that editor's note at the end. And that continued until the day he was elected. So this is a purposeful, wicked intent to take down Trump.
And absolutely. And back to what the media is doing, I'd say that during the Obama administration, they were doing their jobs, the global elitist jobs, in protecting him. You know, reminding me of
It's
George Stephanopoulos.
Arm of the government, my goodness.
Stephanopoulos asking Obama, you know, about, you know, right after the election, and Obama said something like, John McCain did not question my Muslim faith.
Yeah.
And Stephanopoulos saying, oh, you mean your Christian faith? Yes, my Christian faith. And I saw a video compilation today of the first 100 days of Obama's presidency and the questions that were asked of him. And you're exactly right. You know, how's your golf game compared to Tiger Woods? And, you know, just these non-news related questions and how soft they were. And then you see that atmosphere today in the media versus Trump and how hostile it is. And it's to the point, it's just so ridiculous. You have to either laugh or throw your remote through the TV, because it's just insane. We only have about a minute and a half left before the break. If, let's say, we've seen Trump make some deals and put some things together where, certain companies say they're going to bring, you know, X amount of jobs back here. They're going to invest, you know, millions or billions of dollars back into the U.S., to continue the job growth. We've seen them get out of the different trade treaties, specifically the TPP that the Democrats were all against. That was going on, when Obama was trying to push that through. Let's say Trump really brings unemployment down from where it is at about 25% to about 15%.
The real numbers.
Or does anything good that really helps the American people. Will he get the credit he deserves from the media?
No. I mean, there's no way. You know, look at Reagan. Reagan's still, according to the left-leaning media, the worst president in history. You know, that's ridiculous because his approval ratings, if you go to unbiased polls, are around 85%. You know, Americans love Reagan. And yet, according to CNN or the Washington Post or the New York Times, he's the doddering old fool of America. So, no, Trump will never go down in history in the minds of the New York Times as anything but a circus act.
Gotcha. Our guest is Cheryl Chumley, CherylChumley.com, the author of two books, Police State USA, The Devil in D.C. as well. Links on HagmanReport.com. Got about 120, 130 questions from listeners all across the world, most in the United States. Questions we'll ask our guest, George, Mary, George again, Mike, Tom. We'll get to your questions. Just stay right where you're at. You're listening to the Hagman Report. Again, our guest is Cheryl Chumley, CherylChumley.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. And we'll be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
From all of us at Trading Post in the Woods,
we pray you have a healthy, safe, and prosperous 2017.
And we would like to thank all of you for welcoming us to the Hagman and Hagman family. You're all a very wonderful and special group of people.
Because we believe it is so important for you to work and acquire good health this year, we're going to do something that we've never done before as a thank you to you for your support. We're going to make something available that we believe everyone needs.
During the month of January, anyone who invests in their health by purchasing either our American Heritage Remedies Kit, our Survivalist Natural Remedies Kit, or $200 in individual remedies of your choice, we're going to give to you our crisis remedy, just in case, for free. Your health must be a part of your preparation. We're here to help you with that dream. May God bless y'all, and may God bless America.
Happy New Year!
Everyone, this is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our final segment on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest is Cheryl Chumley. She is an author, a writer, and a speaker. Her website is CherylChumley.com. That's CherylChumley.com. Her two books, The Police State USA, How Orwell's Nightmare is Becoming Our Reality, and The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington. We have a number of listener questions for Cheryl, as well as some of our own to continue with. But first, Cheryl, I'd like to ask you if you could talk a little bit about your podcast and where folks can find that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you. I do a podcast for Soaring Eagle Radio, and it's just 2 minutes on their show every day. And you guys can also see it on my website, CherylChumley.com. But it's mostly just my 2 minute quick take on news and cultural happenings from a Christian conservative view.
Excellent. And, folks, again, that's on Soaring Eagle Radio. And make sure you bookmark Cheryl's website and check that daily, as she does have all kinds of news content and information up there.
I gotta check. Wait a minute. We gotta check to make. Are you wearing your white white privilege pin? I just Eric the tech,
right,
zoom in,
yeah,
on that. All right. Yeah. What a great idea that is, right?
Yeah, the college campuses are going nuts, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, and before I want to ask the listener question here before we get into the politically correct and snowflake culture. Margie asks, who is the biggest threat to Donald Trump and Trump's agenda inside his administration?
Important distinction to inside his administration.
You know, I don't know if there's a single person you could say, but in my view, I would say it's the Muslim influence. There's a lot of unknowns going around about, you know, care and a lot of the radical Islamic influences that are coursing through our government right now. And I would like to see Trump root out some of those influences, because I see that as a real danger to American society.
Did you happen to catch, Cheryl, the news about, what was it, the three brothers that were working as IT people? Wasn't that three brothers and I guess their fiance or wife for the members of Congress, the eight members of Congress, that they were Muslim and they were escorted?
Yeah, I did. And I don't have a whole lot of details to add to it, but that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And you look at Keith Ellison, you know, the DNC guy that the Democrats want to elevate in the party, and his Muslim influences and so forth. You look at the Huma Abedin, with Hillary Clinton, and, you know, some of the influences she brought in government. I think we just need to be aware and have open eyes about radical Islamism and Muslim influences in our government.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, it's playing out, manifesting on our streets right now today. We can see the fruits of, in my view anyway, the fruits of Obama. And even before that, with George Bush to a lesser extent. But this tolerance of everything. I don't know. We got a number of people wanting to, I'm going to get strung up if I don't ask her from these listener questions. What do you think of the situation with Milo right now, the conservative? I'm not sure if you heard about that.
Yes.
Any thoughts on that? I mean, there's a whole array of questions and different iterations of the same question, basically, but what are your thoughts on what's going on there?
I'm a little bit sad that this may be what takes him down. And let me just be blunt. I'm not a huge fan of Milo's. He brings forth a message in a way and with a life choice preference that I don't completely agree with. At the same time, I understand that I'm not a millennial and that you need the upcoming generation. You need those who are younger than you to be able to speak to a younger audience. And that's who he spoke with. I didn't listen to the video of what he said, but I read all the excerpts, and I find it shocking and disheartening and very, very awful, to be honest. But I do hate to see him brought down this way.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen the video either, and I haven't even read the transcripts. I just saw him reference, so I'm not even sure exactly what he said. But
and he issued a clarification. He said that there was a part, he was talking about how he, not only is a homosexual, but was a victim of child sexual abuse.
Sad.
And apparently that was taken out of context to make it sound like, he was advocating for pedophilia. I just caught the tail end of the story, but, you know, I don't agree with a lot of what he says, but he is an interesting, voice in the conservative arena, if you will. And as you said, you know, he's gaining the attention of a lot of college age and millennials, which is kind of where, if we can go to this direction a little bit, the snowflake generation.
Oh, here we go.
The triggered people, the great offense that I don't understand where it comes from. I mean, if I had the mindset of these people, I mean, my goodness, I don't know how I'd ever have gotten anything done in my life without hiding under my bed forever.
There,
I mean, from the chalkings, Trump 2016 written on chalk at college campuses, sending people into, you know, emotional shock, pretty much. How has this been allowed to continue to progress the way it has, to where these people's irrational feelings are being validated?
Because of the professors. Nowadays, I think it's like 80 to 90% of professors are, you know, Democrats. And they're not even, you know, the moderate, open-minded, let's explore all different types of views type of Democrats. They're nuts. And as a matter of fact, a few years ago, I actually looked beyond some of the Democratic labels and found a lot of these professors were actually disguised socialists. They contributed to socialist magazines. They freelanced socialist articles, bringing up and furthering socialist mindsets. And on my own college campus, I was subjected to a lot of these socialist-minded principles and statements and so forth, particularly in economics. So this is the reason. You've got professors now who are fueling this. Some of them actually even give course credits to college-age students who go out and participate in rallies against Donald Trump, which is about as snowflake as it gets. But, you know, this is what we're dealing with. This is something that you're going to be fighting for the next few years.
Got it. And I agree with that. It's at that professor level. I mean, we're they're indoctrination centers, not educational places of education, in my view, anyway. Now you in your book, folks, seriously, go to CherylChumley.com or just go directly to Amazon, Police State USA, and her latest, The Devil in DC. These are great books, but in your book, Cheryl, The Devil in DC, you lay out a kind of a plan of action for Christians and conservative Christians. It's stuff we didn't even get into, like debt. You want to address debt, for example, as you did so in your book?
Sure. Just real brief. Debt is slavery. And if you're carrying it in on your individual basis or in your home, you need to get rid of it. Because how can you hold your government accountable, and how can you insist that your government reel in debt and stop spending money it does not have if you can't do that in your own home? You know, when you owe someone's money, you are ceding a little bit of your freedom to that person. So what do you think our country is doing when we cede all our debt to China or to other nations who maybe aren't so friendly to our interests. But this is where we're at as a nation. And paying down debt is not a boring topic. It's something we should get right on.
And we've got some listener questions that sort of segue into, or that segues into our listener questions about your thoughts as a journalist, as a writer, author, with respect to the Donald Trump's current picks, kind of selecting from the pool of the bankers, the World Bank, the
a lot of Goldman Sachs
and stuff,
some Monsanto people.
Your thoughts on that? Is that kind of we've got a fish in that pond, or is that something else going on there in your view?
Well, it's not surprising to me that Donald Trump, who has spent his entire life as a businessman and investor, would want to surround himself with business-minded people and investment-minded people. It would be shocking to me if Donald Trump had looked to, you know, the activist camp or the professor camp to come, you know, be a part of his administration. Of course he's going to turn to those people that he's familiar with, that he understands their way of thinking. And to be honest, I don't think we as Americans should read too much into that. You know, one person in a cabinet position versus another is not going to be a shaker and mover of our government. I think we need to look more at the overall picture of Trump's picks. And the biggest ones to me was Mad Dog Mattis. I liked him quite a bit, and I liked Rex Tillerson as well.
I agree with Tillerson. Mattis, you know, okay. Yeah, I'm really wait and see. I mean, I know his history. Wait and see on that. But Tillerson, interesting nonetheless. And go ahead.
While we're talking about the nominations in the cabinet, if we can just talk a minute about the House and the Senate. We see Trump pushing through all these executive orders, and I understand his need to want to keep his base happy, those who got him elected, to keep his promises. But with the House and the Senate both being Republican and having a Republican president, we know that there is still some hostility between the mainline politicians of the party and Donald Trump. You know, you have the Never Trump movement and all these other things. But why not, what's with the dragging of the feet of Congress?
That's a really good question. That's very perceptive. You're absolutely right. And this is why I point out in my book yet another solution, that you need to stop funding the main political parties, because this is why. They're not up there representing the little people. They're up there representing their own interests. And this is why you have foot dragging. You have people who are in the established wing of the Republican Party, people like John McCain, whom we have just learned a few weeks ago has taken money from George Soros. You have people like Paul Ryan, who rose up through the ranks of the establishment, whom once again has taken funding from George Soros. And you have a few more of the movers and shakers on Capitol Hill who opposed Trump from the beginning, and they didn't just oppose him quietly. They were vicious. They were attack dogs that were more aligned with the Democratic Party than they were with the Republican Party. And look at Paul Ryan. He didn't even come out until after Trump was elected and was still mulling whether he would support Trump or not. So this is why the foot dragging, because you have Republicans that are more interested in their own self-interest than they are in those of the constituents who elected them then there in the first place.
All right. And I totally agree. There's no way we're going to get to all of these questions, obviously. So perhaps we can distill this down. Give us some takeaways from your book. Our book is full of really great information, great steps, how we can change. Well, let me ask this one question here. I think we can sneak this one in here. With respect to Betsy DeVos with the Department of Education, your feelings, I mean, should we even have this department, and also, what are your feelings about the selection there by Trump?
Yeah, I don't see the need to have a Department of Education. You know, educating your children is a parental right. And if you want the government involved at all, then it's a local issue, a state issue. And the federal government's involvement has done a lot more harm to the education system than good. You know, the Department of Education is all about helping the unions, keeping the unions alive. They're not about educating the children, no matter what mantra they put out. And, you know, Betsy DeVos, I don't have strong opinions about her either way. I would rather not see the department in existence. So anybody who leads that department, kind of not on my top list of favorites anyhow.
Understood. Okay. All right. Biggest takeaway from your book, or a couple of good takeaway points? I do, by the way, I do like your reference here. I don't want to take it too much out of context here. Really, our last hope rests with our first hope, as God promised. If at any time I announce a nation or a kingdom is to be uprooted, torn down, and destroyed, and if that nation I warned repents of its evil, then I will relent, not inflict on it the disaster I had planned. And that speaks so much to, I think, to where we're at. And that is from your book, The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington.
Mm-hmm. And the takeaways, one of the things I asked you earlier that I forgot when you re-asked was there any one thing when you were writing this last book that you learned that you didn't know before that really jumped out at you?
That's right. That was the question you asked. I couldn't remember. Yes, there were actually several, but the one that jumps to mind right now is the hugeness of the government in America. I have a chapter on how big the government has grown, how many employees are at the federal level, the state level, and the local levels. And I swear, I had to fact check that about 10 times because I could not believe it. I mean, there are so many government employees, and you don't even recognize how many there are. But this is where your money goes. And that's why, to me, one of my biggest takeaways for this book is you need to be bold. Because if you're not going to be bold, you're just going to be rolled over by all the government entities. And, you know, that's not what our country is about. That's not what made our country great. And that's not what God wants for us as Americans.
That's right. Yes. And you just said the magic word. I think you should win a Pulitzer Prize. Fact-checking. Something that's not done today.
Yeah, so read that chapter. It was unbelievable.
I was looking for that information. When I read through that, I was kind of surprised at the, I knew there was a Leviathan, a behemoth of a government, but I can't find it right here. But
what you just talked about, how big the government is, how many employees it has, it makes, the rest of us feel like there's very little, if anything, that we can do. And I know we kind of touched on this a little bit, but as a American citizen who's a Christian, what are some of the things we can do within our own family, within our own sphere of influence?
Oh, there's a hot one.
To help bridge the gap, both in politics and just the overall atmosphere of division.
Well, I think most Christians know that. Be usable. Be somebody that God can use, you know. And for myself, I find myself constantly checking myself and finding a new area I need to work on. You know, I guess for this year, it's working on peace and humility. Those are two tough topics for me to look inward on and deal with. And those are two things that I find that God wants you to have as part of your characteristics, as part of your character, so he can work through you. And I think if every Christian in America looks inward first, what can I do to make myself more usable to God, then the rest of the solutions will come.
I agree. Very well said.
Absolutely. Cheryl, we are just in the closing moments of the program. Any appearances you have coming up that you want to promote? Anything you're working on you want to promote? And anything you want to touch on that we haven't talked about yet?
Sure. Well, you know, you guys are phenomenal. The work you do, it's really great. And, you're a great host, but I can tell you're passionate about what you speak about, and I really hope God grows your ministry, your radio ministry, in the months to come, because the country needs it more than ever right now. And as far as what I'm working on, you know, just go to my website if you're interested in how I look at politics from a Christian conservative view, and maybe it'll help arm you when you deal with people you come into contact with who speak about things that you want to fight, but you don't know exactly what to say. And as far as appearances, in November, I'm going to be a keynote speaker at Canada Christian Heritage Party, and that should be broadcast, so I hope maybe people might tune into that as well.
Super. All right. And we can go to your website, obviously, for details. And your website, of course, is CherylChumley.com.
I'm sure we can have you back on to promote it before the event.
All right. Yeah. You've been such a gracious guest with your gift of time. Thank you so much. I know you've got a husband, children, and two dogs and a cat waiting for you. So, but thanks for your gift of time, and we really appreciate it. And thanks for your great work too. Oh, your books. You've got two books coming out that you're working on.
I'm actually, one is a fiction book, and it's Christian-based. It's going to be a challenge for Christians. I'm not going to go into too many details on that, but the other one is nonfiction, and it's Being Bold. It's how to be bold and become the person God wants you to be.
Perfect. Okay. And, you know, our audience has a lot of experience with the Christian fiction genre, or the fiction genre based around prophecy or current events. So
Christian faction.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
so
whatever.
Yeah. When yeah, we'll have to get our hands on those books as well, because that's an interesting niche of in the world of writing that I think is underdeveloped and underexplored a lot. Because I've read some really good ones. That I would, you know, when I think of a fiction book based on current events or based on real life, especially when dealing with religion and. You know, it's kind of hard to take seriously, but when you start getting into it, and you're like, "Wow, this rings a lot more true than a lot of the nonfiction books I've read." They get really good, so I look forward to that.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being our guest tonight. God bless you, and boy, keep on doing the great work you're doing. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. You All as right. well.
Thank you.
That was Cheryl Chumley. Yeah. CherylChumley.com.
Great guest.
Yeah, absolutely. And her two books again. Excuse me.
Yeah, we're
Police State USA and The Devil in DC. Devil in DC was the latest book, and you can get that on her website or go to Amazon.
You know, and I've got to say this, when I read her book, The Devil in DC, Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington, you know, it seems like we have just about everybody who comes on our show is an author, but her book really is more spiritual than than not, and I
didn't read the book. I read excerpts, read the table of contents, read.
I think you read enough of it. Too,
other people's reviews on it, and saw some pages here and there. And
I mean, she really comes at this from the spiritual perspective.
Yes,
you know
yes.
what I'm saying? Whereas some people will cloak that in the spiritual realm or in the spiritual aspect, but she comes at it just head on.
No, you're right. Usually it's the opposite. Usually it's you know, a little bit of scripture mixed in with a lot of politics. This is foundationally biblical, and it extends from there, which is the way it should be.
If you can, Joe, if you'll allow me this, I just want to let people know, folks, if you go to HagmanReport.com or just go to our YouTube channel, check out the last two videos that I have done. I'm going to let people know that the investigators, the volunteer investigators for the Northeast Intelligence Network, I've quietly been in contact with them over the last several months. I'm really not going to get into too much detail, except to say that instead of looking at solely the Islamic terror threat, in case you haven't looked at the video.
Yeah, there's two up there. The unholy anti-Trump alliance.
But the one before that, which is...
The prepare for conflict in the U.S. Marxist groups up their activity.
Just like, and you recall Stuart Rhodes being on the air with us and how the way it was Operation Hypo, he had some people that he inserted into these.
Yes.
Okay. Here's the deal.
The District J20 people. And
right.
The,
we have
anarchists.
The same thing with respect to a couple of investigators, more than a couple, but not a whole bunch, okay? But volunteer investigators that are actually monitoring the Marxist progressive organizations all across the United States right now that have reporting back and saying, hey, folks, or you know, hey, Doug, tell the folks that these problems are, or these potential for conflicts are real, and they're talking about how to not get arrested, but kind of be violent, you know, push it right to the edge and even go over the edge, and but not get arrested. So there's some things happening out there. And the alliances that are being made, the 6,000 offices or branches or chapters of
yeah, I dismissed that when I first heard it. When, even when you were talking about it, I said, you know, this kind of sounds far-fetched.
I'm telling you.
Sounds a little too much, too good to be true.
No, no, this is...
But now I see lawmakers coming out and speaking out about it. Judge Napolitano yep. came out and said that Obama was acting in a treasonous...
Well, now that, yeah, but you've got, okay, Obama Organizing for Action, which is the iteration, third iteration of Organizing for America. Okay, but what I'm talking about is separate... but concurrent with that, Organizing for Action.
Right.
And even part of it, you've got groups like Indivisible. You've got groups like the Millennials for Revolution. And I'm just trying to think of some of the bigger ones off the top of my head here.
Yeah, the anti-fascist groups.
Yeah, and Antifa and all of that, of course. But all of these are now you're seeing this coalescence of these groups. And I guess what I'm saying to you, and I'll just... close it out by saying this. You're seeing these people who are being guided and pushed by people like Bill Ayers. And I'm saying people like, in that capacity of the elder statesman role of a, what would you call him, an anarchist, advising these groups. And you've got attorneys on these groups, on speed dial. Just almost every chapter has got an attorney on speed dial. So if they get arrested, they can get bailed out. They've got many professionals. So I guess what I'm saying is these are not, when you see the protests, these are neither spontaneous nor are they just or organic or willy-nilly. They've been very well planned, and they're targeting right now, over the next couple of weeks, they're targeting the people, the Congress people that are going to be going out to town hall meetings. Watch that very carefully and watch that evolve, because you're going to see potential violence at these events.
Folks, go to HagmanReport.com. On the right-hand side, under show notes, you'll see the little radio icon. And the rest of the week, thank you, John, for booking all these wonderful guests and laying this out for us. In the article, tomorrow, hour one's open. We got Leo Holman from WorldNet Daily joining us in hour two.
Wow.
Standeo, hour three. Wednesday, Paul McGuire will be our guest for the first 2 hours, followed by Pastor David Langford in the third hour. Thursday, we have the first hour open, and hopefully we'll get a chance to take some calls. But Thursday, at 8 o'clock, we will be joined by YouTube sensation Lynn Lee Oz. And she'll be with us for an hour, followed by Robert David Steele, who was just on with
back.
Us recently. He's been making a lot of waves in the alternative media.
Pedigate, I'm going to tell you right now, folks, there are arrests being made. I didn't mean to jump in, but I got to tell you, there are arrests being made on this. And what's taking place is there's some low-hanging fruit that are being...
Another pedophile ring in Florida was
yep.
busted today.
Yep.
We talked about that on Friday.
A general, a high-ranking military, a retired military officer.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things taking place right now. You got to keep your eye on the news.
And then Friday, Dr. Ted Brewer, followed by a new guest, Pastor Warren Campbell, comes to us via a listener request. So we're looking forward to that. We've got a great rest
multiple
of the week planned.
Requests.
So we will be back tomorrow. Until then, stay safe. God bless. Have a great evening.